Right then, welcome back to the show. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, somebody I'm very excited to have a conversation with about a topic we've spoken about on plenty of walks and plenty of Sunday mornings. She's currently taking her PhD to become a psychologist, so I'll definitely be learning a thing or two. One of my favorite people in the world, Abby. Welcome aboard. How's it going?
Hello. Hi.
How are we?
I am good. I'm excited to be here. Like you said, we've had these conversations quite often, so it's kind of the same, but just with it being recorded, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing with what I wanted this to become, where before, like during COVID, it was just me waffling on about nonsense, telling some embarrassing tales. But now it's a little bit more, I don't know, a bit more sort of trying to help people out and sort of help myself in the process, really. So I thought, who better in terms of someone we've had these many conversations with in the past to sort of help myself and help other people, really. But yeah, so today we're going to be talking a little bit about like mental health, really, and sort of dipping into your world of expertise and sort of conversations we've had in the past about tips to sort of promote positive mental health. Because I know, well, myself included, but a lot of people have moments where they kind of struggle with things and where they probably can't deal with things the best way they can. So I think hopefully today can be a little bit of a guide for people to refer to where they need it.
Yes.
But before we get into all that, let's do the real nitty gritty things, and we'll kick off with some quick fire questions, just to get to know Abby. So, name somewhere in the world you would love to visit but haven't yet.
I have been there, but I haven't been there as an adult, and I really want to go back to Paris. So I have been there, but I remember going there as a kid and like it just feeling so magical, just because it's like in so many movies, and I just want to experience that again. So I guess I have been there, but that is where I go on about going all the time.
You're a romantic at heart, fair play.
Yeah, I need to convince Ross, my boyfriend.
There we go, we'll get on to him now. first minute, go on then, get yourself to Paris. Second question, what one song have you listened to a lot lately?
So I actually sent you this earlier today, because when I was having a bit of a tough time before Christmas, just starting out the doctorate, just thinking, oh my goodness, this is really hard. And I was literally living day by day, trying to like just get my to-do list done. And my sister sent me this song called Joy in the Morning. And I can't remember who it's by, but that's a great song. That's not very quick fire, but there's a little story behind it.
that's going to be the running theme, I think, for the next half hour, 40
minutes. I don't know if I could do quick fire. I do long fire. Yeah, I'll try and be quick. I'll be quick now.
We'll go. Just quick. Next one. Where do you go, or what do you do when you need to decompress?
On a walk. That's where I go.
There you go.
That's quick.
I'll give you that. What's a quote or mantra that resonates a lot with you?
Make time to rest, or your body will make time for you to rest.
Yeah,
I think that's
that.
A quote.
There you go. Like, especially
that's my version of quote.
That's your little asterisk underneath.
Yeah,
there you go. Love that. And then finally, who is your role model?
My role model is my supervisor called Emma. She basically, I speak to her every week about different clients that I see, and she's really been great this year. So she's my role model.
There you go. Shout out to Emma. Nice one.
Shout out to Emma.
There we go. So the long fire questions are over. Now we can get into the real.
Oh, that was really bad. I just had in my head I was going to do them faster, but no.
I'll just do a time limit on the next ones and see who's in the leaderboard. Quickest quick fire questions.
That's it. Need context, though. You know, if I just said Paris, you wouldn't know where I've already been.
There we go. Now we know.
Now you know.
but today, like we said, how we've connected in the past is we used to live together. So before I moved out to the desert, We live in the same house, and we've had like millions of these conversations in kind of all different forms, kind of either of us on the receiving end of advice at times. So I thought when kind of building back this platform and sort of trying to build what I wanted it to look like, I thought this kind of sort of pigeonholed you a little bit, and just thought actually this sort of area, I thought actually you'd be a good person to get on to talk about things like supporting mental health kind of methods and practices to try and support, and almost then listening to our own experiences, more so my own in terms of me kind of getting the violin out, but just trying to help other people, you know. So I guess people who might be listening might resonate with one or two bits, and if they do, then happy days, then we've done
our definitely. Job.
But to begin, because I said that at the beginning you're doing your PhD, why did you choose to enter the world of becoming a psychologist?
Yes, so I have always been kind of surrounded by people who are helping people. That was very much my upbringing. My parents have been incredible, and they still are, in helping people within their kind of Christian religious community. So that was very much like a tenet of my upbringing, like do to others as you would have them do to you, things like that. And I saw my parents like continually counsel with a small c, like sort of within the church, and it was something that I always was like fascinated by. And then when I was in my kind of late teens, early 20s, I really started to struggle with my own mental health. And I met a therapist, or my mum found me the therapist at the time, and she completely changed my life. Like she was just incredible. And it was about the relationship. It wasn't about any fancy method that she used or fancy technique. It was just that she was a human that really listened, really understood, and really cared. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, if I could just be that for someone else, that would be awesome. So that was around when I was like 20, is that kind of light bulb moment. And I'm now 27. So I guess the last 7 years has been like a winding road of doing an undergraduate degree, working, and then working with like kids with behavioral challenges, and then went through a couple of working in prisons with mental health, and ended up doing this. So it really, like when I set out, it really wasn't to be a psychologist. I know a lot of people do. I remember people in my undergrad being like, I really want to get first because I want to get on the doctorate. And I was like, that sounds like a lot of work. So that's not for me. But here I am. So, yeah. How the tables have turned. It's all been an accident, but here I am.
The idea, kind of stumbled forwards and kind of, oh, here we are. Now doing your doctorate. But now, fair play, it's interesting. I think in terms of sort of how the origin, I guess, really of sort of seeing live examples of kind of treating how you would like to be treated. I just then on that sort of topic was thinking, how would you, quite a big question to throw at you, but how would you describe your sort of purpose? Is that sort of something that has stayed quite similar, or is it adapted over time?
Yeah, in fact, I was talking to Emma, my supervisor, who I mentioned before, this morning, and because she was talking to me about the fact that I put a lot of pressure on myself as a therapist, and she was like, put a lot of pressure on yourself, and you're always kind of doubting yourself. So what she was kind of meaning it in a negative way, but I kind of flipped it on its head and was like, I really appreciate the importance of the work that I do, that I have the privilege of like holding people's lives and their like emotional core, and I have an impact on that, and I can also be Can I swear?
Feel free, man.
I can be really shit. Like, therapists can be really shit. And I've had really shit mental health professionals in my life, and I refuse to be one if I can help it. And I probably am for some people. Like, I'm not going to be able to help everyone, but that's my purpose, to be the least shit I can be.
That is a fact. Yeah, there you go. I'm going to have that put on like a CV or on a tombstone. There you go. Purpose was to just be a little bit less of a shit therapist. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, just do good and make people feel heard, and that's my purpose.
Because that's the thing. Before I met you, was my understanding of therapists, counsellors, was the sort of the black sofa. You lie down, put your feet up, your hands on your chest, and sort of release all your problems. But then sort of here, listening to you talk about your own experiences and things like this, a lot of it is very much super dependent, I guess, on sort of social connections and sort of vulnerability, and being able to kind of be that person to be opened up to, because these people who I imagine you're dealing with have not ever had to do that, or rarely had to do that to anybody. So you have to be that sort of character to be able to, I don't know how to put this, to be opened up to not feel like, I guess, not for them not to feel judged and all these, it's quite, I'm trying to be quite generic with it, what I'm trying to say, but I think I resonate with that from, I guess, from meeting and living with you, really. You sort of personify that on a day-to-day basis. So I guess being a less shit therapist is not a bad way of putting it, it's interesting to see like the other side of it, because you're, like I said, TV, films, the therapist is the one sat on the other end of the room talking, oh, tell me about your trauma, tell me about your problems. but it goes, there's a little bit more deeper, a little bit more sort of interpersonal than that, I guess.
But I think that for me, there is a really, this is the balance that I try and strike. It's completely sticking with the client and their world, because they are the most important person in the room and it's their opinion that matters. And I don't want to bring my own bias or judgment, or this is their space, while also not being weird. It's like, I also need to be a real tangible human that they can understand is normal. So those are the two things that I hold in mind.
But do you find, I guess everybody does it, I'm quite guilty of it, in terms of like, you would say, like someone would tell you something and you're quick to go, let's say you talk about Paris, like that, to go to Paris, I could go, oh, I went there when I was X and X. And it's quick to, rather than sort of actively listening, people almost wait their turn to then speak, and almost wait and hear a keyword and go, oh, I'm going to just tell about my experiences of that. And they actually, sometimes the people you're dealing with, even people in general, probably don't need that. Sometimes they feel like they've been listened to, and almost the sort of idea of that you might be opening up about something, and rather than you just going, oh yeah, I felt that, that's happened to me before, they kind of go, well, I'm not talking about it, almost like respectfully, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about me. So
so massively. People, well, they're not paying me to hear about my life as well, so it's a waste of their money to hear me chatting. So I try and say the least words necessary, which, as you know, is probably quite hard. But I really try and pick my words thoughtfully.
I guess, do you find, like that, I guess you've only got X amount of time with your clients at a time as well, so you almost think, actually need to not use bang for your buck's probably the wrong term, but almost the idea of sort of just, I need to maximize the time they have to allow them the time to open and to be, feel like they're making progress, rather than me being the one speaking, and almost be like the reflection board, let them kind of talk, bounce, and just kind of open them up with further points and questions in it, etc.
And it depends what type of therapy. I'm not going to get into that because it's quite long-winded, but there are lots of different types of therapists. So you can definitely go to more chatty ones who maybe would share more, but that's just, that's not my approach, because that's not what I see as helpful. I don't, it's not that I don't talk, it's just that I'm more considerate. I wouldn't just chat away, sort of thing. But maybe no therapist would do that. Maybe that's not fair to say that.
But I guess it's like knowing your clients as well, knowing who can kind of bounce off better with conversation, I guess. Or it's almost like the more, yours is probably the more extreme end of the spectrum in terms of, like, we all have friends who we give advice to, receive advice from, etc. And that might be a bit more of a, like, with a friend, it's a bit more of a conversation, a bit more ebb and flow. But somebody you haven't really got much of a rapport with, or you might have only seen once or twice, it's still quite like early sparring. How do I kind of bring them up here and all that sort of thing? So we kind of alluded to it earlier when we were chatting through the questions earlier on, and you raised a really good point. It's kind of adapted to one of the questions I put. So the idea of how has training to be a psychologist, how's that like impacted your friendships and how you maintain and build relationships? Have you managed to park work on the side and be able to have your own sort of life, or is it very much intertwined?
So I think from living with me, you will know that I'm a very relational person. I love friendships and very sociable. But I think being, even like especially this last year, more than any year than, you know, the last seven, because I'm now constantly immersed within the academic side and the theoretical side of, actually has probably, now I have all the sort of psychological jargon to go with all the kind of relational thoughts that I used to have. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I remember one of my colleagues on my course, she said something about just always coming back to clients, but also people in our lives, with empathy and remembering that they're a human and we're all just trying to do our best. And I think that's really helped me, because sometimes you can be like, oh, they're doing this because of this, and or oh, they've probably got this going on, or, you know, and it's actually like they're just a human trying their best. And so that's something I do ground myself in, even though my ability to kind of pop people into boxes has probably developed.
I guess you're with the boxes a bit more specific now, but I think it's
nice.
There you go, like, almost like put them in that sort of that their own niche. But but do you find, like, do you still sort of do it subconsciously? Because I guess you're very much educated to not spot certain things, but almost be aware of certain things and how people respond to things. You almost just go, without even saying out loud, in your head you just kind of quickly go, oh shit, like, this is, they're showing this trait, or they're showing this tendency.
There are like things that people say, I'm like, but mainly I can be quite in the moment with friends. So mainly when I'm with a friend, I've kind of taken that hat off. The times where it's kind of more blurred is if I'm like hanging out with one of my friends who's also in psychology, and then it just turns into like a therapy group / supervision, then you're just analysing everything.
Every but that's quite body fun. Language, you're gonna go, ooh, what's he thinking? But but no, that's I find it really like really fascinating in terms of like being able to, where you're so kind of hyper aware of things, let's say 9 to 5 is the example, but probably a bit more longer than that. So then when you come out of that situation, it doesn't feel like there's much of a switch. It's not something, it doesn't feel like something you can switch off. It feels like something you've almost got to be constantly doing in order to kind of, well, keep it refined, but also just to be in that sort of mode that when you do need to step back into it, it's not like a, like, I think an example, like, I think of like myself, for example. So, like, I work with kids every day. And now, more so than ever, like these sort of moments where I've had a bit of time off and stuff, I still, even in those, sort of carry myself in a certain way just in case I bump into somebody, just in case I'm out and about. Like, for example, I went on a walk today just around where I live and I bumped into two kids I coach. Like, it's one of the ones that I could have been like, I know you can't do it here, but like, you could be having a couple of beers on the street, you could be on the phone effing and blinding or whatever, but almost kind of aware of going, oh, actually, like, I just need to make sure like you're still carrying yourself in a certain persona in a certain way. That's not too different to how I am, really. I'm not the type to be getting like battered on the street and all this sort of thing, but allegedly. But then yeah, so just like it's interesting to see if it's a, it's like some roles and some careers you can almost take the hat off and leave it at work, and like some, a lot of roles like yours, I guess especially, is very much becomes part of you, a cape that you sort of keep on even if you don't show it all the time.
I think so. I think so, and I think that like it also depends. Like I think, wait, let me I think this year as well, although I've been learning a lot about kind of how to understand humans, the specific course that I'm on particularly, and the reason I chose the course is because it has a humanistic focus. But what that means is that it's really thinking like, I do not know best. A person can only know a person fully, and I can only ever kind of look through a window at that person, and that kind of there's only so far that psychiatric diagnosis or any kind of understanding that I can develop of a person, there's only so far that can go, because I can't, it's not like I can do a CT scan or an X-ray and really understand you in a kind of fully biological way. So the importance of kind of being with a client in therapy rather than kind of doing therapy to them and assuming that this is what they need because I am the expert. So I think that approach maybe helps as well.
Yeah, no, I completely understand in terms of you're very much differentiating to sort of the needs of the individual rather than going by the textbook and hoping things stick. That's just like how I guess it's like simple. You deal with people who've kind of been in and out of prison and all this sort of thing. And with kids, it's the same in terms of that, the preface of you deal with the individual because everybody is so complex and so different that one, you can't just paint them all with the same brush. So it's one of those ones where I guess you have to, that's then where it becomes, rather than like, and there's a lot of things people kind of think they can step into these different worlds, but it's a skill, it's an art to it, to be able to do it effectively, especially in your sort of world where you're, where, like I said, you're almost kind of dealing with people's like lives really at times. So it's very much a skill that is, I guess, learned and delivered and constantly reviewed and reflected kind of in your own time, and also like when you're in your day-to-day and now in your sort of academic phase really. But no, I buzz off this sort of stuff, so I'm happy with this. But we're gonna kind of take a bit of a pivot and sort of talk a little bit about what we wanted to kind of chat about really today. So basically, what this kind of stemmed from the thought of was, I've still got the book that you recommended me when we lived together, a book called The Mind Workout. Granted, I've never finished it. I've always kind of picked it apart. I've kind of gone through different bits and pieces of it. I should really probably do it in order. But it's one of those ones that I always kind of see on the side and always do. It reminds me of you. So kind of looking into that book and the idea of compulsions is something that is I am very aware of now, that I've probably still not dealt with a lot of my own compulsions. But for the listener, how would you describe what compulsions are?
So compulsions are kind of behaviors that we get stuck in. And when I say behaviors, I mean like thoughts, actions. It doesn't necessarily mean something physical, but things that we try to do to kind of neutralize and manage unwanted, intrusive thoughts and feelings. And for some people, these compulsions might be so severe, they get a diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder. But for others, it might be just something that cuts across them living life the way that they really would rather be living. And kind of examples of compulsions might be kind of asking for reassurance is a big one. So, you know, do you still like me? Am I wearing the right outfit? Is the house clean enough for the guests that are coming round? Do you think that they like the food? Do you like the food? All of that, it's like I'm trying to neutralize that anxiety of what do people think about me? Am I good enough? Am I meeting a standard?
Yes, it's almost like the idea, isn't it, of doing the kind of the keywords I've got written down here, almost the sort of anything you do to sort of cope, check and control the feelings you don't like. So like, for example, yeah, like you said, like a common compulsion nowadays, isn't it? It's like your phone, your WhatsApp pings and the sort of thing of, I don't know what it is. What's it going to be? Oh, I need to check it. And almost the compulsion of checking almost relieves the thing of, oh, am I missing out on something? Or am I waiting for this message from this person or this sort of thing? And it's almost then understanding what you do kind of to, like I said, to avoid the certain emotion, the feeling that you don't really want to have.
Yeah. So it could be anything for different people. Online shopping, you know, excessive exercise, not exercising, watching TV excessively, things like that.
Yeah, and it's one of them ones where I guess this has now been a platform of just complete transparency for me, so I'm just going to just say this anyway. So basically, like, I think back to myself recently, I'm saying the last 6 months or so, and I feel I've become very aware of certain compulsions. So one of which, this sounds really irrational and stupid, right? For a long time, I was like really worried about bumping into my ex-partner, like, for no reason why. Didn't like, it was very much amicable and all this sort of thing, but to the point where I'd be driving and I'd get the thought and I'd pass a taxi and I'd have to drive past the taxi and look in to see if they're in it. I'm like, yes. There's like hundreds of taxis on the road, like why, like it's so like, yeah, irrational. But it almost felt like a thing of like, you know, that sort of feeling of like, oh, I wonder if they're there. And you're thinking like, and with the thing of like, oh, am I going to bump into them? Am I going to see them? But it, for like maybe at least like a month or 2 months kind of in the immediate, that was like an everyday thing. And I was just there like going like, now it's like one of them was, I think back and going like, that was so weird. I kind of gotten over the kind of hump of it, but that was very much a compulsion I was very aware of, but didn't know how to really stop. But it was almost like I had to look, or I'd feel like, oh, but what if I was, you know, I'd have that sort of like itching away.
Was it so that if she was there, you'd know?
Pretty much.
So you could be ready.
Yeah, and I just, it was really something that was really weird for that sort of spell in that kind of in the immediate before the new year, really. And it was like, well, then that's like when I was kind of thinking about this, I was thinking, like, what have I had? What sort of compulsions have I got? Like, the phone is one that's always the one. Like, waiting for certain WhatsApp messages, waiting for whatever, or thinking something pops up. Oh, am I got to be aware of what's going on here? But really, actually, sometimes trying to take control and recognizing those things, like you said, in terms of how do you recognize those actions that, like someone with OCD, washing their hands, why do you wash your hands? Oh, it's because I think this, this, and this. And you think, actually, like, but are those things really going to happen? is that actually going to happen? Probably not. So, like, almost taking away the sort of the catastrophic sort of thinking. That's what I found in sort of my own experiences, really. But yeah, this one of the ones I think is like, I think the more I've sort of developed my own sort of emotional maturity, I say is probably the key term for it, is realizing that the compulsions kind of, like we said, come from trying to avoid certain feelings. But I think from our own conversations and sort of trial and error, really, has been a case of you have to feel like, whether it's good or bad, it's important to allow those feelings to be felt. I think it's the next kind of point was going to have on here was the idea of, like we said, like, you're not a rock. And that's kind of a big premise in the book and stuff like this, in terms of you have these sort of feelings for a reason, and it's quite healthy to feel in a certain way. And almost the more, I guess my own experiences, the more you try and push feelings further down and try and avoid them, the sort of bigger they come back to bite you later on. So I guess it's in one of the example of that sort of meaning of you're not a rock. Is there anything I've missed in terms of that? Like, what does that sort of mean to you?
Yeah, I think what you said really hit the nail on the head. And I think to add to that, it is so challenging, like, to genuinely feel and genuinely listen to your feelings and be brave enough to feel the anger and the sadness and the jealousy and the feelings that are just gross, and to really climb into the swamp. And I think that's when therapy can be really helpful. If you have a therapist that climbs into the swamp with you, it can make that process of sitting with the really tough feelings slightly less scary, because hopefully they'll be able to contain you or draw you back out when you need to, so you don't get lost in it. But yeah, feelings, I think that's a bit similar to what I said about rest. Feelings demand to be felt, so in some way or another.
Yeah, 100%.
So if you don't feel them, then...
Yeah, completely agree. I think, like I said, the sort of back in the day, I think it was one of them ones where it was it's one of those ones where it almost, the stereotypical thing, isn't it, is, I guess, for a man in my own context, is sort of our, like, man up, that sort of nonsense, right? But I think it's one of those ones where vulnerability and being able to be open with what you're feeling and what's going on is such an important thing, not just for yourself in terms of helping yourself kind of navigate these moments, but also the sort of social connections you have. And I think that's why we got along really well when we lived together. It was very just, we're quite happy just to be open, and like, you'd share what's going on, and I'd share things about what's going on with me, and kind of then with Ross as well. Ross would dabble in when he wants to open up every now and again, but then it'd be like one of the ones where, just like, I think that's where, I guess now when I've been able to reflect on it myself and the sort of friendships I've made and sort of the power of the strength of those sort of connections has just been through being open, are comfortable enough to be vulnerable and just to give a bit of yourself. There's a coffee shop that I go to here. This is really unrelated. It sounds unrelated, but it kind of links. It's called Meraki, and Meraki is like a Greek term. It means to give a little piece of yourself to what you do. So it's one of them ones where I quite like that sort of like little kind of buzzword, little keyword. But I think it's one of them ones where the sort of feeling of being able to be open enough and in yourself to give a piece of yourself to somebody, to be, even if it's just a vent, even if it's just to, I don't know, just to kind of to to see things from a different perspective, or like with you, for example, I might say something in a certain way and you go, well, actually, that might not be the problem. This might be the problem. And then I kind of go, oh shit, like I never would have thought about it. Because in your own perception, you only can kind of see it on one end rather than seeing the sort of 360 of it. But no, it's really interesting to speak about. That's one of the ones like I buzz off it, because it's a very much an ongoing day-to-day thing I do in my own head. So sometimes being able to verbalize it's quite nice.
yeah. No, I just think I think there's something you just said that reminded me within therapy, there's something about, as a therapist, being comfortable to not rescue people. So I, you know, if somebody's really struggling with something, you sit there with them. You don't rescue them. You don't give them the answer. You don't tell them to pull it together. You sit there and you allow them to affect you as well. You allow, there's almost like the allowance, because you're emotionally kind of, I don't know what the right word is, whether available is the right word. I don't know if that's the right word, but emotionally present, maybe. You have to be okay with somebody not being okay. And that's been a real challenge as well, because you don't even have to deal with your own not being a rock, but you have to deal with other people's not being a rock. Which is always what Ross says. He's always like, oh, I'd hate your job. That was horrible. I just want to give them a solution.
but why, what, I'm interested, why is it that you're asked to try not to fix? Is there like a certain method or reasoning behind it?
Yes, there is. And it is the type of therapy that I do. Again, like definitely some therapies and therapists would give you solutions. For me, I guess it goes, if I go back to what I said before about the way that I had therapy when I was in my early 20s, and that's kind of stuck with me and why I really believe in this approach, is that if you said to me, oh, I'm really upset, I don't like, I'll go for a really practical example. I don't like my car. My car keeps breaking down, and I just don't like it. And I was like, why don't you buy a new one? And you're like, she doesn't know. I can't buy a new one because of X, Y, Z. And like, it's like, I'm giving you the solution, but the solution, you know, maybe you don't have the money to buy a new car, or maybe that's just for whatever reason not possible. So then I've just completely cut the conversation. I've given you a solution. I haven't understood what you're going through. And you're just going to be like, no. Whereas if I go, you know, really open up that conversation and either opening up or drilling down. So you can either go ask for more context, or you can go deeper into the feelings. So I might say, like, how does it feel to not have a car that works? So I'm really kind of understanding what the car represents to you, what it means to you, what it would mean to not have a car. That's much more important to me than you just going to get a new car, because that's not really why you're in therapy. Or I might open it up to try and find out kind of more context. But yeah, that's why I wouldn't give a solution. Is that a good example?
Yeah, completely makes sense in terms of like exactly that, in terms of you don't know what the other pieces are at play. So like you said, in terms of that side, for example, it might be something like that might be the surface level problem, but really they can't buy the car because don't have the money to buy a car, or don't have a job to pay for, all that sort of thing. And it might trigger some other, I say, explosion somewhere else. So you got to think, oh, well, where has that come from? If you're just dropping in the solution where they've probably been told that or found that somewhere else, yeah, it's like not quite helping them for what they really, really need. But no, that completely makes sense, 100%. So kind of linking again to sort of supporting people through kind of underlying things that they probably aren't aware of, I guess, is from your sort of professional, personal and sort of academic experience, how would you advise or support somebody who may be struggling with their mental health? Do you have any sort of, I know it's not like a one size fits all or sort of that sort of thing, but do you have any ways or experiences that might be of use to people?
It really goes back to what I said before, is get in that ditch with the person. Don't drag them out, you know? If you're trying to help somebody, don't give them the solution to buy a new car. Just sit with them and really hear what they've got to say and really unpack the difficulties. And, you know, that's not always possible. We don't always have the time for that, but that's what I would recommend, is just be a human and be a human that cares. And that would just go so far to helping somebody, and that will make such a bigger impact than something else. And then I think if you're talking about like what an individual would do, so that's what you would do for somebody else. But did you mean that way or the other way?
Yeah, I think that's also a relevant one as well, in terms of how you might support somebody who might need it.
So how would you?
Yeah, like let's say as an example, let's say myself, I'm somebody who kind of on a busy run, on a busy schedule, I can kind of dot between things and things that will kind of drift in, kind of drift out quite quickly. But let's say the last couple of weeks, for example, I've kind of found myself just starting to just do this and just kind of lull a little bit, and sort of those feelings of kind of the past in terms of like thinking I'm standing still and thinking it's just starting to drop us in, and thinking, oh, you're not quite, it sounds really irrational, but almost thinking like, oh, I'm not feeling quite good enough at certain things, or not feeling like desired, or not feeling like I'm really trying to, I'm being my best self sort of thing. How would you support somebody sort of feeling in that sort of context, really?
I think what I would have used to say is strategies for how to make you feel better. But now I would say embrace the fact that you don't feel great and be comfortable with that, and that, like, okay, there may be something, there's something that's going on inside of you that does not want to feel not good enough. But the truth of it is we're all not good enough, and we're all good enough at the same time. Like, nobody's good enough, nobody's not good enough. We're still somewhere in the middle. It's kind of quite grey, and you won't ever reach good enough. So that's kind of like a futile goal. So being comfortable with the parts of yourself that aren't good enough will allow you to experience that ebb and flow through your life with more kind of peace, potentially.
Almost like, is it like almost like lower the bar of expectation a little bit, so then almost like you feel like, actually, rather than trying to be at 9 out of 10 every single day, being sort of 5 out of 10, as long as you give sort of 100% of that 5 out of 10, you've kind of done what you can with the resources you've got. But how do you almost then, it just popped into my head, how do you feel about, like, some people kind of will say it's almost like you've got to deal with the sort of yin and yang of emotions, if the good is only good because you feel the bad, and vice versa, the pain is only, the suffering is only there because you feel the ease. But then some people say, actually, is there importance in being neutral and trying to find yourself lower in that sort of balance? It's just kind of something that's just popped into my head there, so I don't know how you feel about the sort of that sort of thinking.
Yeah, I think all of that at the same time. I think, you know, I think when I think of something, for an example of a marathon, I think marathons, half marathon, I don't think marathons are great. I think half marathons are great because it pushes yourself. You've done some training, you've achieved a goal, great. If you haven't got injured, lovely. I personally think a marathon may be taking that too far, but that's just personal preference. Maybe a marathon would suit somebody. But the point being is, it's not bad to push yourself. But if you're pushing yourself because you don't feel good enough, then you are always going to come up short.
Like, if you're doing it for this reason, to try and find fulfillment in something, you're not, when you get there, you're gonna still feel that same unfulfillment. So, like, you know, like the idea of people going, it's just because I didn't, please tell me if I'm kind of not quite there, but almost the idea of, like, people say, if I get this job, then I'll be happy. If I then get into this relationship, then I'll be fulfilled. But really, you need to sort the fulfillment out first. So then when you, like, almost the idea of, like, yeah, Tyson Fury, for example, dreamed, oh, to be a heavyweight champion in the world, then I'll be this, yeah, and this gets, yeah, there, feels, yeah, it for 2 hours, and then just goes completely off the other end. That's sort of I don't know what, there's a yeah, paradox, there's a name of it, I can't remember what it's called, but that sort of thing of trying to be easy with your emotions and your sort of your downsides, and being accepting that they will happen and are almost part of the course, to then,
yeah,
be able to, so they almost, is it almost so they don't feel as daunting or as bad when they happen again? Or is it more a case of that you just know if they happen, they're going to feel like this, but that's okay, that's kind of part of being human, that you'll have these sort of ebbs and flows?
Yeah, I think it's similar. If you think of, like, a bodybuilding athlete, they might train for months and months and months for this one moment on stage where they're super lean and super muscly and super tanned and super spray tanned and super makeup and wigs and everything. And they look tip top and they might win, which is great. But they've won and the competition's over and they're starving and they go in and eat 20 donuts because they haven't eaten anything. And then they binge for a month because they're so hungry. And then they're not in that condition that they were in, because humans aren't made to be perfect. And that's not to say that you shouldn't do the bodybuilding, that's a personal choice, but it's, if you're looking for that hilltop moment, you're always going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and that's interesting in terms of, like, I guess my own context, really. And I guess, like, I don't want to keep referring to myself, but this is very much this sort of platform, sort of, that sort of thing. But then, like, yeah, so almost the sort of thing of, I find I'm very, very self-critical in terms of, well, professionally and even personally to an extent, like these sort of feelings, like being in a rut, I'm sat there going, God, I'm doing nothing, ruddy, ruddy, rah. I'm feeling this way. I don't, why am I feeling like this? What's the point? All this sort of thing. But then, like when things are sunny and rosy, the saying is you sing when you're winning. When things are going nice and easy, you don't even think about it. You think, oh yeah, this is great, this is whatever. But as soon as you kind of dip down again, you're thinking, oh, well, hang on a minute. Well, I was feeling like that 2 weeks ago. Why am I feeling like this now? And
yeah,
sometimes not just being so, I guess for myself, trying not to be so harsh on myself, to be like, why am I feeling like this? More so just being a case of, okay, I'm feeling like this, it's fine.
Yeah.
Let's just now just be, ride the wave a little bit, I guess, not try and like swim upstream, and just kind of flow with it a little bit, to then when the kind of the waters lessen, then you can kind of find yourself kind of getting back to well, ideal, even though that might only be X amount of the time, and you might feel like this X amount of the time, but just being whatever sort of environment you find yourself in, being able to be like, you know what, like, I can, it's okay, I can deal with it, rather than trying to change, yeah, it and try and swim the other way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think for people who are really suffering, you know, actually chronic mental health issues that aren't day-to-day sort of life, that is slightly different. You know, you do need to seek help and maybe, you know, go to your GP, and the interventions that you might have are going to be different than somebody who's fully functioning but just kind of wants to better themselves. So, you know, it is different, but I think we could all do with a dose of being a lot kinder to ourselves, whichever camp you're in.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, my dad tells me this all the time. He always says, he always kind of says in these moments, he always goes, like, just look how far you've come. Look at the positive stuff, what you're trying to do, what's happening and all this sort of thing. Because you almost, in those moments where you're kind of feeling a little bit sorry for yourself, you just neglect all the sort of positives that are actually going on, where you might think, actually, your job might be this, you might be doing this, you might be with this person, you might have these friends, you might have this setting or whatever, you might be going and doing this in the next few weeks. But really, when you're kind of feeling yourself a little bit, feeling a bit down, feeling a bit anxious or whatever, that almost just becomes like cloudy. It's quite a funny thing how your sort of feelings can impact your sort of your general perception of the world. But if somebody's suffering in a serious way in terms of, then that's where other steps might need to be taken. But if it's more sort of seasonal or sort of occasional dips in form, as you say, it's almost a case of
just being okay
to deal with it, I guess, really. But
nice,
that's definitely something I'll consider going forward. 100%.
I've got to do
my best. I'll ask this question, I'll throw this one in from, so I put on Instagram kind of asking for questions and had a response. So shout out to Bello. She's sent a question in saying, do you think creating certain habits helps with improving your mental health?
Yes, definitely. But caveat, they have to come from yourself. Going back to what we were saying about the solutions, I'm not going to give you a list of habits to do because you will likely not do them. But do you have a think for yourself of what's really useful for you and what kind of things that would be useful to build in your life? I personally have an A4 monthly chart that I got from some shop in York at Christmas, and it says things like take your vitamins, drink water, go for a walk, make your bed, have a cup of tea, have three meals, read a book for fun, and I can't think of anything else, but do the washing up or things like that. And that has helped me so much personally, because that would have been, that sounds like really basic things to do, and don't get me wrong, they really are, and I'm not saying that everybody needs that. Some people, I'm sure, can do that without a list. But for me, if I get tired, or especially because now I don't have the structure of a 9-to-5, I just have a whenever, however, whatever schedule. It's like those things can fall at the wayside. And, you know, maybe I do 5 of those 10 automatically, but, you know, the other 5 really might be left to the wayside, and they make a massive difference. Like having 3 meals a day makes a massive difference. Also having fresh air. And I think that for the habits that you're building, for me, again, this is just from my personal opinion, don't make the habit like go for a 5k run every day. You just feel bad, and I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to sustain it. So it's making it something like get fresh air, that's very achievable, then that can be really, really beneficial. 100%. It's called behavior activation. It's great.
There you go. But I definitely see the benefits of it. Like when that last term, in my own context as well, I didn't do it as much as I should really have done, but I'm a horrendous morning person. I just started to put the alarm for like 6:30, and then as soon as I wake up, go for a walk. So I used to go walking for like 15-20 minutes as soon as I woke up, because as I woke up, it was like sunrise at this time, it's like 6:30, 7 o'clock. So I would just get myself changed, go straight out, and just go for a walk for 15-20 minutes. And I found that would just be such a brilliant start to the day. It would just settle me down completely, because in the mornings I usually feel like rushed, like I feel like I'm not prepared. Because of like, if I'm not a real morning person, if I have to be out the door at 9 o'clock, I'd be waking up sometimes at like 8:45 and just flying about the place and then going. Then I'd like miss, skip breakfast, all this sort of thing, and sort of feel like, but I found waking up early in the moments of one, going to bed a bit earlier, but then waking up earlier, that sort of routine of getting up, I then get home at like seven, I'd then be able to like shower, have a bit of breakfast, kind of plan my day a little bit, so then when I was then attacking the day, it just settled me right down and I was able to be a bit more rational, I was able to be a bit more have a bit more time to just be a bit more prepared. But yeah, I definitely agree in terms of having habits that suit you and suit your context and suit your day-to-day life, I think are really important, because I know everybody sees that wake up at 4 a.m, go to the gym, drink 4 gallons of water, do 2,000 press-ups before sunrise. Some people do it, but that's, you see like the top 1% of people doing that sort of stuff. So sort of doing things that are very much in your world and what are achievable to you, I think if that, as long as it gives you some sort of fulfillment and some sort of accomplishment during the mornings or during the days, like reading or doing a bit of exercise, or I don't know, drinking more water or eating healthier or whatever it might be. I think as long as it's, you feel like it's doing you good, being a bit more, providing you with a little bit of sort of that accomplishment, I think it can only be a good thing, really. What's it called? Behavioral action, did you say?
Behavioral activation.
Behavioral activation.
But and it's kind of one of the first line therapeutic interventions in the NHS for things like depression. But really, it's just like get up and go for a walk. But it's just the theory behind it is the more that you do, then you feel better about yourself, you feel more accomplished, and then you want to do more, and then you feel better and you do more. And that's kind of the scenario around it. But one of the things on my list is have a rest. So sometimes I look at my list and I'm like, oh, I've done everything, but I haven't sat on the sofa and watched Netflix. So that's on my list because I really think rest is productive.
Like I said, that's really important in terms of having a rest in however that looks for you. Like for you, it might be watching Netflix. For me, having a break from football is probably watching football. It's just that sort of thing of where it's something that's not like so stimulating as what you do day to day. I think sometimes taking that edge off by doing something like, you said, go for a walk, go for a coffee. I quite like an evening coffee down here, which is quite nice. Going for a wander and grabbing a coffee. Oh, game changer.
Why not? I wouldn't suggest.
But it's I say in a moment it's good, but I probably, I don't know, I have to check my sleep stats, I think. But
check that one out.
Heart rate's like 200 BPM.
Go for the decaf.
But yeah, I think definitely to answer that question, I think if it's something like you said that is kind of wholesome and something that helps you out and you feel like it's gives you an urge to want to do more, crack on. So thank you for your question and thank you for answering it.
Thank you for your question.
So we've got only a couple left, which are quite easy, quite short ones. So for you, now you're doing your PhD, what's next in your journey? What's the plan?
So I am wrapping up year one at the moment in terms of big assignments. I'm going to continue clinical work as in seeing clients through the summer, but I've got 4 big deadlines in May, so that's where my head is at. And then after that, just kind of looking to next year, really. I'm going to be in new placements, seeing at some point next year, so that's to look forward to. And then working on my thesis, which will be next year, so I've got lots of things to do. But again, I really look forward to qualifying, but also it's remembering to enjoy the process, so I'm trying to do that, but it's really hard. I should practice what I preach.
And almost the idea of, like, I guess the joys in the climb, isn't it? I think
It's
Yeah. great to see the end goal and see the finish line and see all the what you'd get out of it. But you seem to be quite aware of self and almost being like, actually, like, as much as sometimes it can be quite demanding, these are the moments that you'll remember the most when you're kind of
Yeah, I do tell
pushing through
myself
things. That's
that. Yeah.
it, but no,
A bit
it's
like
it.
childbirth, though. Hope some of it will go, as in, like, I hope some of it I won't remember. As in, some of the long writing sessions, like, I don't mind forgetting.
Yeah, just
But yeah, no,
park a
I'll
couple of those, is it?
just remember the good bits.
Remember
Keep the good
the coffee
bits.
shops and the laptop being open, and just be like, yeah, I'm doing some bits here.
Yeah, just like, just was there.
I just did it, just completed it, mate. But
Yeah, completely. It wasn't hard.
smashed it. But yeah, then I guess the penultimate real question, what is this, probably a bit of a bigger one. This is why I want to try and, you're the first person I've asked this, so we'll see how this goes. What is legacy to you, if it means anything at all?
When you say legacy, it just makes me think of KSI because he's got legacy tattooed on his back. So, and I actually think that's not a redundant thing to say because I actually really like his philosophy around legacy and I think I'll adopt that myself. So he kind of, to my understanding, does a lot of what he does because it's not about the money he makes and it's not about the fame. It's about like building a legacy, building a story, but making an impact. And obviously, fame and money clearly aren't what I'm going for because, but it really is about kind of what's going to be on my metaphorical tombstone. And goes back to that kind of just being a good enough therapist, giving somebody, there's something that we used to say in my old job a lot, which is give someone a good experience of therapy. Even if you don't help them, even if they go away and think, oh, I'm still really struggling, but they think therapy was all right, I'd try that again. Like that for me is such a win. So I would really like that to be my impact and legacy.
Almost like the idea of, like, some people kind of talk about changing the world and all this sort of thing, but I guess in your thing, it's almost changing your world and almost impacting your sort of immediates in a positive way.
Yeah.
But nah, it's not like that. That's a nice way of almost then being, I guess, to say, being remembered, or kind of your lasting sort of print on who you've worked with, to them to go, actually, you know what, like, I felt a bit of progress, or I felt like a breakthrough's happened, or actually, I just feel like I've had a positive experience, really. So, no.
Yeah, like, oh, that was good. I'd love that. If somebody said, if I heard like somebody like leave my office and I could hear them talking, and they went, oh, that was good. I'd be like, but also sometimes therapy is not good and it's really painful, and that doesn't mean it's bad. Sometimes therapy just isn't good because you're working through stuff. But it would be nice at some point to have an like, it still should be. I'm tripping over myself to trying to be nuanced, but yeah. Sometimes that good therapy can be painful therapy. But yeah, that's worth saying as well.
Like, almost, yeah, like I said, kind of providing a positive experience, whether that
Positive experience.
whether
Yeah.
it looks like good or bad, kind of perceived in the moment. In the long run, you think,
Yeah.
actually, that helped. But no, I get you 100%.
Yeah, like taking medicine. Like,
Yeah, take your vitamins and go for walks.
yeah. It might not go down straight, but it helps you in the long run.
That's it, 100%. The last thing. Again, I've stolen this from Diary of a CEO. It's kind of a massive podcast. I'm just going to steal it. Is the idea of passing on a question. So I'll ask you that once this is over, just to send me over a question that I will ask the next guest to have on. It could be about
Okay.
anything. It could be about what we've spoken about. It could be just an anything question, and then the next person will answer at the end, and then I'll pass it on. So then the plethora, the randomness of people that might pop on could get like either something that's quite introspective, or can you get just like a really stupid question? So that'll be the last thing I'll ask of you. But now I'll wrap this up here. I think we've had a decent hour of had an egg and a bit of a catch up. But no, thank you for your time and your efforts in kind of dealing with some of the questions I've thrown at you. I know they're not sort of easy questions to decipher, but you smashed it. So fair play.
Thank you for letting me chat to you.
But no, I'll call this recording off now before the thing ends. But yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to get in touch. And you know where you find this sort of on all your streaming platforms and all this sort of thing. But yeah, it's about having decent conversations with decent people. So Abby, thank you very much for coming on and having a chat.
Thank you.
And then.